Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Another race hour completed on IMSA Radio. 107.9 around the track, Sirius 216 XM 202, and around the world in sound and vision for most of you at imsaradio.com. Hello there, if you are just joining us or maybe coming back to the race after nipping away. 20 minutes before 11 Eastern, 17 hours rather of the race still to go. I'm not going to say we're settling down because we aren't. We've still got this great battle with Kobayashi. We'll do a Mazda in-race update for you in a moment. Kobayashi and Scott Dixon battling for the lead. Scott's pulled out to 1.3, nearly 1.4 seconds. He is a very, very good endurance driver. No, scratch that. He's a very, very good driver and also gets great fuel mileage in whatever he drives. I remember talking to Dario Franchitti about him some time ago. Dario, by the way, pretty good on fuel mileage as well. Always put it down to his own fuel mileage, down to not left foot braking. And when they went to the IndyCar that had the brake pedal on the opposite side of the steering column from the throttle, he had to learn a left foot brake, which is not an easy thing to do if you've not done it before. But Scott Dixon does have the ability to make mileage on that car. So Scott Dixon then, let's have a quick run through. We're in traffic. We'll keep an eye on the gap as Scott Dixon comes through the GT Daytona field. Both of the Lexus back out after early wars. Now coming up behind the number 88 Porsche. That had Catherine Legg in it the last time I looked. And good to see that car running well. Now past the Volt Aston Martin and in behind the number 57 Winward AMG GT. Kobayashi rather frustrated, I think, that he's seeing Scott Dixon just open out a little bit. He took a second out of him that time around. So Dixon, as Nick noted earlier on, not just quick, but really quick in traffic. And always difficult as the leader because you hit the traffic first. And once in a while, you might wake up a dozy GT3 driver like me going around there. And
I think at this point in the race, everyone's used to being overtaken.
That is true.
It's absolutely true, though. If you watch the first time the leaders come to traffic in any race, there's a kind of a huge kerfuffle. Go, whoa, I never expected the car to overtake you from behind. Well, you've only done, you know, 1,000 endurance races before, but now everyone's kind of used to it. More important, they've also worked out where they'd like to be overtaken, if possible, you know, in the various parts of the track. Because there's a kind of point, yes, you don't want to lose time overtaking, but even more, you don't want to lose time being overtaken. So if I breathe off the throttle here, can he get by without, you know, giving me aero wash into the next corner? So it's a two-way street. And you can see, sometimes that the cars get it wrong and sometimes they get it right. And the biggest problem you've got always, of course, is if you're in the fastest car, but the second fastest car is trying to get past the third fastest car at the same time, and they're all focusing on their own individual actions.
Well, and that's why there's an art to being overtaken as much as there is
absolutely
to doing the overtaking, because you want to lose as little time as possible. Let's continue our in-race update with Mazda. And it is the Wind Autosport Orica that leads LMP2 in 8th position at the moment. Thomas Murrell behind the wheel, having recently taken that over from Matt Bell. In 2nd place is Timothy Bure for Tower Motorsport, the number 8. And in 3rd, Antonio Fueco for Cetelar Racing in the Dallara. So Orica, Dallara in LMP3, it's Kenton Cook for Mulner Motorsports, a car that started on pole position. That's the Duquesne, formerly Norma, that organisation. Lance Wilsey in the Chonkreach Motorsport, Leashier in 2nd, and Carl Robinson in 3rd, 6.33 and 74. in GT Le Mans. It's the two Corvettes, the racing competition Ferrari, and Timo Glock now behind the wheel of the first of the BMWs. So that's 4-3, 62, 25 and 24. So five of the six back together again. Remember the big problem early on with contact right at the very start for the third of the three full-time entries for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. The WeatherTech number 79 Porsche, that car was hit fairly substantially, and by the BMW number 25, the red car, I had to remember that there, and required some remedial work on the pit lane. GTD, Pat Long and Brian Sellers duking it out. Pat Long for Wright Motorsport leads. Porsche number 16 from Paul Miller Racing's number 1 Lamborghini Huracan Daniel Serra, sitting about 3 seconds away from the lead battle in the 21 AF Corsa Ferrari. Then it's Ian James for Aston Martin, another 2 seconds further back in the 23 Heart of Racing team car. Then Philip Ellis behind the wheel of Winwood Racing. Philip, very tidy on sim racing as well, being part of the iRacing Nürburgring digital series run by VCO Esports, and he's very good in real life on the Nürburgring as well. Nice to see him in that Winwood car. And Lawrence Vanter, Pfaff Motorsport, Porsche 911 makes up the top six. That is your update from here at Daytona with 16 hours and 53 minutes to go. So 31 now back on the lead lap. Felipe Nasr, a 38-1 last time around. All right, he had a bit of traffic, but the leaders, 35s. The two Cadillacs at the front of the field, Nick, are the quickest cars in this phase of the race after, before and after that caution.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're beginning to find a settled race pace. I think the track now is going to do not a lot more, apart from getting a bit dirtier or a bit more marbling over the next 5 or 6 hours. We reach the kind of the bottom of the temperature dip of the day. I mean, what is it out there now? It's now what, nearly 11 o'clock in, nearly 11 o'clock over in Florida. So it's getting said, but it looks like they've just got their setup right. I mean, because you're not looking at a big driver offset. So it's the fact they've got their setup right, and it's not just how you get round and pound round the laps. It's also obviously whether you have the dexterity and the flexibility within the car to easily change directions to get past other members of the car, whether other cars, other classes. So they found a sweet spot, certainly compared to the other DPIs. Whether that will remain as we go through this 24-hour race and the ever-evolving situation is questionable, but it's nice to be there now. The only problem is it's very unlikely you could put in a massive expansion of lead, because there's going to be at some point, despite the 4 hours of green we got a minute ago, another yellow flag that bring them back together. And my question always is, if you've got this car that's going so well, when do you actually start thinking, well, I'm half a minute ahead, there's no point being any further ahead, so I'll just go to fuel safe mode?
So Nasr dropping back, a 38-1 last time around, but the leaders were 37-1s. Now he's come down to a 37-3. It did seem to take the red and white number 31 a little longer to get up to speed after restart, even earlier on, if memory serves. But I'm going to keep an eye on that now, because he's dropped 15 seconds on the leaders since the restart. Just a couple of other storylines as well. Jeremy feeding through some information to us, even though he's on a break at the moment. The 55 Mazda Motorsports DPI rather missed their opportunity. I'm picking my words carefully, and I can't read exactly what Jeremy sent to me from Larry Holt. The 55 missed its opportunity to get the lap back. They came in at the wrong time, came in a lap early. Missed communication is what we're putting that down to. If you know Larry Holt, you can imagine that he was fairly forthright in what he said then, how he described that genuine mistake by the team. What a character, what a brain as well. You were talking about brain the size of a planet earlier on, Shea. Put Larry Holt in that category, Multimatic, but still 1,600 people or something they're employing. at their main spot up in Toronto. Still have an office in Huntington, in the centre of the UK. About 8 people working there. So, getting a little bit of running now after that break for the yellow, and that was caused by the Lamborghini with an issue. I saw a very, very sheer stat. Ah, yes, SRA, Smoking Puppy, in both 20 and 21, the fifth caution of the 24-hour of Daytona was caused by a mechanical issue for the number 19 GTT Lamborghini. Yep. Both fifth caution. Something about that then. We'll have to watch for that next year, won't we? And see if it does it again. Let's hope they can make sure it doesn't happen. That's the sort of stat and progression share that you love, isn't it?
That's the kind of thing that I watch out for sure. I'm just looking at our Michelin Endurance Cup points that have been released from that first stint. Would you like to know them by team? It's very easy if I do it that way.
Okay, cool.
All right, DPI with 5 points is the number 5 Mustang Sampling Cadillac. With 4 points is the 01 Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing. With 3 was the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura. And then everybody else in the class got 2. Nice and straightforward.
Yep.
For the LMP2 class, it was car number 11, Wynn Autosport, in their debut. They scored the maximum amount of points. Second place was the 82 Dragon Speed. They took 4 points. In third place with 3 points was Tower Motorsport. That's car number 8. And then everybody else got 2 points. In LMP3, Riley Motorsport, car number 74, maximum point. Second was Sean Creech for the 33 LMP3 machine. And then in third was Mjolnir Motorsport, and their car number 6. And then in GTLM, we've got car 4, which has led most of the race today. 5 points, 4 points for the sister car, the number 3. And with 3 points was the 25 BMW. And then in terms of GTD, which is our only other class, it was Wright Motorsport who came away with the maximum number of points. Second was Paul Miller Racing, the defending Michelin Endurance Cup champs in that category. Third, Heart of Racing for the 23 Aston Martin, and then everybody else with 2 points.
And that was at the 6-hour mark. It's 6:12:18 and the end here for Michelin Endurance Cup points here. As far as I remember. Interesting to note as well, by the way, that the point scoring in Michelin Endurance Cup share has not changed this year. It's exactly as it was. It's 5 on down, as you mentioned, whereas the point scoring in the main championship has been basically timesed up by 10.
Yes, and actually this is a wonderful opportunity to explain something. I spent some time on the phone this morning with Race Control. The points that were scored in qualifying, and yes, you heard me correctly, points are now awarded for qualifying. You get 35 points for a pole position, 32 for second, 30 for third, and so on down. Now, you might be thinking that's a lot of points. If the last time you joined us, that was a race-winning score for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. In qualifying for this event, we had a race, which resulted in the car scoring points. So the drivers of the car that started the race today were awarded the points based on where the car's starting position was. This is specifically in reference to Ryan Hardwick, who qualified the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche, but is not participating in the race due to health issues. And Ryan, we wish you the best. We hope that you get well soon from your concussion that you sustained the other day. But in effect, Trent Himmen, who fills in for him, takes the points for the qualifying position, which for Wright Motorsport, I believe, was 9th. And it also comes into effect for Stephen McAleer and Kenton Cook, who did not participate. Well, Kenton participated in the qualifying session, but Stephen McAleer was not a part of the Mjolnir Motorsports Duquesne team, the number 6. He is for the race, so he does get points, meaning that anyone going forward who participated in the Rolex, in theory, has points going towards them when they get to Sebring.
Yeah, and that's across every driver, not the person who, in this case, who took the checkered flag to get the grid position. Or indeed, in the future, there it gets even more complicated in the future, but I don't even want to go there at the moment because there's point scoring for in some of the classes for two different drivers in two different sessions, and I've already need to put my head in a bucket of cold water just thinking about that. Nick,
how many points for a win?
Points for a win? 350 now, isn't it, Cher?
350. Yeah. But the interesting thing is that we have a couple of the classes who are participating in, say, 11 events over the course of the year. If you get 11 pole positions, that's equivalent to a race win.
Yeah, yeah, very good.
North of a race win.
Is IMSA's idea that we're going to have the mostest points ever for our champion?
It's trying to bring more value towards qualifying. And to be honest, then you can punish people for changing their qualifying position from qualifying into starting. For example, if somebody elects to start at the back of the pack on fresh tires, they forfeit all of their qualifying points and walk away with zero, not minimum points, zero.
Right. Okay. That is interesting. That's the bit I was going to ask you about. And share what we were talking about a week ago, when the qualifying race was on here at Daytona. 35 is for the pole. What's the difference between first and second? 350 for first and second gets you.
That would be 320 points.
Yeah. So you can make up the difference between first and second if you were on pole and the person who won the race perhaps was sent to the back for changing tyres or changing a starting driver or something like that. So
can I be controversial about this?
Yes.
I haven't got a problem with him avoiding points to qualify and awarding points to the race. I think the problem they've got is by awarding so many points, it ends up being very difficult for people to actually work out where anyone is as a championship progresses because the number gaps are so great. And that's not how we work our maths in our head. So if it's like 25 points for a win and someone is 27 points ahead, you know, he's a win and a seventh ahead. If they're 410 points ahead, whilst that's still a win and a seventh, it just doesn't work in our brains. And I think that for ease of folly, though it's exactly the same thing, it's way harder to understand when the gap is 400 points than when it's 25, even though the actual gap in track terms is the same.
See, anybody who's watched Aussie Supercars, will know all about this, because when you get down towards the end of the season, plus some races have more points than others, much the same as they do in the WEC as well. They have additional points for the longer races. And anyway, I don't have to worry about it because that's why I've got Shea and Jeremy to do all of that. We were talking about the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche earlier on, Shea, and it has just pulled into the pit lane for what looks to be fuel only.
Which would mean that Patrick Long is staying aboard, and it means that he is not getting new Michelins, and indeed he's not, just a clean out of the radiator grill and waiting for the Ginger Ninja to go back out on the circuit. Doesn't even get a windshield tear off, just gets a clean. But you know what, Wright Motorsport, I'm a little mad at you right now. I really wanted to see that battle between Sellers and Plongy, and nope, as soon as Sellers started catching up, they called him into the pit lane. But this is interesting because this means that Patrick Long is going to double stint his tires, whereas Brian Sellers was already double stinting his tires. And the leading class was Daniel Serra in the AF Corse Ferrari, car number 21. Daniel was on fresh tires, so this is a very interesting tire strategy happening before us.
So Daniel got into that, he did an 8-lap stint, so presumably he got new tyres then, and now he's done 19, so he's actually almost done a full stint on those tyres, albeit he's been down the pit lane when that yellow came out, as everybody else at the front of the field did. So Daniel, Brian Sellers in second, Philip Ellis in third now for Winward GT4, as the right Porsche and Pat Long goes out. And gets passed on the acceleration lane out of the pit. That's all right. The pit lane speed limiter, speed trap is done at that point. And that was a very rapid exit. And the pit lane is part of the racetrack. I think that was that a GT3 car that came out of...
Kobayashi.
I know it was, you're right. No, was it Kobayashi or was it Rossi?
Or Rossi. I think it was Rossi.
Was it dark blue, was it?
I've got Halen. I've got Jan Halen in that car, by the way, in the 16.
Yeah, I've got that too. And I've actually just received some intel from David Malsher. Hello, David, and thank you. That's saying Wright did change tyres.
Oh, okay. Right, so what we didn't say was the driver change then. But that makes sense. If you change your driver, you want to put him onto a new set of tyres. So that's Jan Heerlen just waving left and right. In fairness, we witnessed the pit stop from the onboard camera. And that is in the right-hand side, the passenger side for this race car. And switch of driver as well, unless something was knocked inside. But if you've put new tyres on after a stint. So that car is out there. Go ahead, Chip.
Sounds like it.
Was that the fireworks in the background?
Should be.
9 o'clock. 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. Yeah, 11 o'clock fireworks. It was in the driver briefing and the SSRs, the supplementary regulations, and they were told just to be careful. Jan Heerlen still moving around on the tri-oval, presumably trying to get heat in the front of that number 16 Wright Motorsport car. That's a teal coloured car. It's a very interesting. That's his second. Going into his third lap out of the pit lane, and the traditional, some of the traditions we haven't been able to do, like the autograph session and the open grid, but the fireworks still happening on the far side of Lake Lloyd from the grandstands. Drivers, as I say, were briefed about it and confirmed that the right car took four tyres, and we think a driver as well on that car. And if you wonder why we didn't pick that up, we aren't allowed to be in that bubble in the pit lane, and that is why our interviews are not on the end of a microphone, but we're using a variety of different telecommunications to get things done. And thanks to the technical team in our main control room for Radio Show Limited and IMSA Radio in London in the UK, just south of the River Thames there. Tim Gray earlier on, and it's Kez Cobb, the irreplaceable Kez Cobb, who I was listening to on the wireless the other day.
The wireless, Jonathan? My gosh, really?
It is actually an online radio station. And she was playing some cracking 80s and 90s music. I was very happy indeed to be tuned in. That was last Sunday, actually, once we'd got finished with the 100 minutes of racing. Sung jingles and everything with her name on. She's hit the big time.
Wow. No, at this point, I'm quite impressed.
Because that's what about it.
Tim's been producing jingles for years, many of them very humorous, but none of them mentioning our names.
No, true enough.
How many years have I been doing these shows with you? I haven't got a single jingle with my name in it.
Neither
of you either, to be honest.
There were
it's your station.
There were some... It's not my station at all. There were some for Midweek Motorsport that right in the very beginning that had names in, but we just tended not to use them because it's a...
No one had as big an ego as me, you mean?
Well, it's a collaborative effort, isn't it? All of these things we do, we can't do it without everybody else. There'd be no point me standing in the Haggerty Global Broadcast booth if I didn't have all the rest of the on-air talent, and indeed everybody else behind the scenes, and whether that's in London, in Charlotte, from the guys at NASCAR Productions who make sure that every racetrack we go to around the States, we see all the cameras for the sessions that we cover. The technical team in London, the commercial team under the responsible adult, our partners, our commercial partners themselves, and of course everybody at IMSA at the track who also make sure that we can do our job. It's a collaborative effort, which is something.
A very long jingle, wouldn't it? Really, yeah. All those names on it.
It's just, I would have to be everybody.
we've ever met.
Yeah,
can I
that's
thank
it.
You to Alex and Matt for sorting out the pictures, by the way.
So yes.
Thank you very much to Alex and Matt.
Yeah, very good.
TV Productions.
Up at Charlotte. Just changed a little. Always seeking improvement. And one of the great things with working with good people, and funny enough, I was talking about this to somebody else the other day when we were talking about doing our sim racing coverage. One of the things I really was impressed about with iRacing was that they were prepared to take a look at new solutions and suggestions, even though they're at the very top of their game. That's exactly what NASCAR Productions have been. We've worked together to find solutions in these difficult times, but we're not standing still. We're still trying to improve, and they've responded really well. So all the Matts, because there are several Matts involved, that's Alex true. And Keith and Patrick as well, directors, thank you very much indeed for all the hard work. And by the way, we will have Rooftop Ray in the overnight session, the Night Owl session, for 3 hours from 3 till 6 Eastern as well. So just coming up to 10 past 11. And just a note there that Alexander Rossi got ahead of Kamui Kobayashi in that last set of pit stops. So I can't.
Doing it coming out of the pits, you know.
It might have been. Rossi is, you know, he's a smart cookie, somewhat divisive character sometimes, but nobody can deny the speed that he has.
He knows what he wants. And I think that when you're on the way up, you're supposed to kowtow a bit more. He never was. And he pushed his way out of series, going, there's no point me doing this anymore. He didn't hang on to F1. No point me doing this anymore. I'm going to go and do something else. Hmm. So I've actually got a lot of respect for Rossi. I don't think he did it in an abrasive way like Scott Speed did and absolutely annoyed everyone else. I think he just made everyone know exactly what he felt in a, I think, kind of professional way. I've got a lot of time for Rossi, actually, whereas some of the other people had similar attitudes, I don't.
Hmm. And there's no doubt about his speed. Van der Zander then leading by 6.2 seconds. The Chip Ganassi number 01 has our pictures and therefore our sound at the moment is from the aerial shots, which are absolutely stunning. Can't hear the cars too much from where we're watching at the moment. But really see the relative pace of the cars and how they work the traffic. And doing a very good job at the moment is Renger van der Zander. He's got a whole gaggle of a variety of GT cars as he's coming up to the kink now. Just heading... actually, through turn 6, my apologies. That was out of the second of the horseshoes at the western end. And now goes to the high side. Low is where you go if you're slow. That's the general rule of thumb, Shane. That's what our race director, Bo Barfield, said in the online driver briefing that was done as part of the protocols here. And it's all different, but there's good reasons for it. There's a special testing station out by over the far side, the back of the racetrack, actually. And everybody has to go there every day, even if they are within the circuit, but not within, for example, the owner and driver's RV lot is separate and separated deliberately from the pit lane bubble. So if you are going between the two, you can't just walk through the gate. You've got to go out to, I think it's gate 70, isn't it? Get your temperature taken, get the QR code, and then drive a specific way to get back in and get into the bubble of the working pit.
Yep, you have to have a sticker on your hard card every day, a different color, and they are different. They reflect different things. They have different letters on them to say where you are and aren't allowed to go. For example, the PR people are not...
Just a moment, because we got the core car, which we thought had played a blinder. John Bennett's moving slowly. Turn 7, which is the dreaded bus stop area.
I think I saw him running slowly on the apron, trying to get back in the pits on around NASCAR 3. I think I just saw him in the background.
That would be about right. I'm trying to pick him up on the tracker. but there's so many cars in a big gaggle at the moment, it's difficult to see. In GT, I'm keeping an eye on that. In GT Le Mans, Corvette Racing, Tonio Garcia leads by a couple of seconds from his teammate Tom Milner. Three from four now, so they've swapped around as well. For the longest time, it was four from three. And James Calado is behind the wheel of the Risi Competizione Ferrari. He's another 2 seconds further back, and he's got 8 seconds on the first of the BMWs, which are running in lockstep. It's 25 from 24, Timo Glock and Augusto Farfus, who was demonstrating the new East TCR car earlier on today. The new Hyundai Veloster with the electric power, and it goes.
Yeah,
it goes. Say again?
The electric TCR.
Yeah.
I see.
ETCR.
When's that coming out? That's a championship next year, isn't it?
Well, talk about IMSA, who obviously are the North American licensees, for want of a better word, of TCR. Being involved in a championship in North America. Marcello Lotti, the original Super Touring and World Touring Car organiser, and the now the creator of TCR, which is, let's be honest, has done for touring car racing around the world, Nick, what GT3 and GT4 did for GT racing. It was a masterstroke from Marcello Lotti.
No, brilliant. And much to everyone's surprise, these things run 24 hours, no problem at all. So the design for 20 minutes lasts 24 hours. That's not many cars you can say that about.
It's normally the other way around some of the cars we've driven in our lifetime, Nick, isn't it?
I've driven many cars that were designed for 24 hours and you wouldn't get 20 minutes out. Yeah, mostly because of the Lucas Electrics, but let's not, with free added smoke, of course. But I think it's interesting, isn't it, how necessity, which is finance, become the mother of invention, you can point at TCR, you can point at GT3, and I think we can now also look into the future, point to DPI and DPI H, or sorry, I keep forgetting DPI 0.2, about how eventually people get sensible and they design platforms that work for the manufacturers and for the customers, and customer racing becomes key. There are only so many places where you can spend cubic dollars anymore, and endurance racing isn't really one of them, because it is powered by gentlemen drivers, privateers, independent professionals who there are works teams, but they all need to be catered for as well by a competitive series that gives you lots of variety and choice.
Yeah, they did a good job. Car looked splendid in the bright red, blue and dark blue livery. Pit stops for GTD share, and in comes the Aston Martin of Heart of Racing.
And Ian James somehow made that 107-litre fuel tank last for an hour and 10 minutes. But also coming into the pit lane was Max Root in the TF Sport Aston Martin. That's the bright yellow one. So both of them pitting on the same lap. I think Root, no, he had stayed out in the last stop too, so that could have been a very long stint for him as well. Both of them in, both of them taking fuel tyres, and it looks like driver changes for both cars as well.
Do you know, we were talking earlier on, weren't we, and to Austin McCusker as well, about why do you keep going when things have gone wrong early on? Milner Motorsports started at the front of the field after winning the qualifying race last Sunday, had some problems. 4 laps down after the first hour, Kenton Cook now back to the top of LMP3. Thank you, Jeremy, for that. And Kenton Cook, the LMP3 on my timing screens are a very bright purple, which is Kenton Cook's sim racing colour. He reckons that he's never had anybody run into him when he's been running a purple car. So I look at that, and I actually, all LMP3s, I keep thinking Kenton will be driving because of that colour that's next to it. And Nick, you commentated on the IMSA Racing Pro Series last year, and Kenton went to that bright purple colour very, very early on in whatever category was racing last year.
He got punted off in round one, didn't he? I mean,
yes, he did. He did, and then he went to the bright sort of chrome purple, including the wheels.
Yeah, he got eased out in mid-Ohio, didn't he? Going around round before the race had started, the final corner before the start finish straight.
Correct.
It's amazing how your brain turns up, isn't it?
into the pits for the number three. This was the leading Corvette. Tonio Garcia in for service with Corvette Racing in the mid-engined C8R. Share, Adam.
He certainly should be staying behind the wheel. He started off this race with a triple stint. Jordan Taylor got in for a double. Nick Katzberg did a double. And that was Antonio Garcia's first stint behind the wheel. So fuel, tires, and perhaps a new drinks bottle for the King of Spain.
Every time you say that, it's a shame Jeremy's not on, actually. I always remember the story about, I think it was Phil Tufnell, English cricketer, who was a spin bowler, S-P-I-N, spin bowler. And for his benefit year, the county he played for decided to get a whole load of hats and sell the hats. Phil Tufnell, King of Spin. Unfortunately, it was misread. And so they all said Phil Tufnell, King of Spain, on them instead, which always makes me giggle. Test match starting this week, aren't we? We're in England in India after a 2-0 win over Sri Lanka.
Leads change, by the way.
At the front of the field, yep. Just a moment or two ago. Kamui Kobayashi, who had been under pressure himself, caught up with Renga van der Zander, using a bit of traffic through the early part of the infield section, and nips through into the lead in the number 48, Ally Cadillac Racing.
That's irritating with 16 hours to go. It's you know, potentially race changing in the last half hour. You just choose the wrong way to go past a back marker at the set, or a different class car, you know, when you were battling for the lead or battling position. He just went the wrong way and the Audi went with it, and suddenly he was blocked off coming through. I think it was coming through two, wasn't it? And that was it. Kobayashi through.
And immediately jumps out into a lead. So again, this is what we were talking about earlier on, people coming to us all the time. I understand that on RS2, IMSA Radio, and live in sound and vision at imsaradio.com. The Cadillacs do seem to have remarkably different performance through different parts of their stint. And Kobayashi has got this one wound up. Alexander Rossi, who'd got ahead of that 48, now down into third, and 12 seconds adrift of Kamui. And it is really, really noticeable how the performance potential of the cars are changing through the fuel burn and the tyre wear. And Rossi, you know, Rossi and Kobayashi came out pretty much together 11 laps ago. And Rossi, as we reported, got ahead of Kobayashi. Renga van der Zander 9 laps ago, so a little bit different. But now 12 seconds behind.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that we you know, there's four Cadillacs in the race, and we're on, you know, and if you watch other forms of racing, you'll think, oh, there's four Cadillacs in a team, they're all in the team together. So No, these are four separate teams running a Cadillac car. Therefore, there'll be four different setups. Yes, things will be similar. They've probably got slightly different aero setups. I'm sure they've got slightly different damper setups. They've slightly different anti-roll bar setups. It'll be, you know, small amounts, but those small amounts will change how the car behaves. As you said, as fuel goes off, as the tyres go through their run, how they run in traffic, are they better in the tow? Whilst they are all Cadillacs, they're all set up minutely differently, and that's why we see this ebb and flow as the cars come together. Because, let's be honest, on the whole, all the drivers are absolutely top rates. There's not a lot between them most of the time, unless they have having an off day or making a mistake. But, you know, you can see now, you know, they're beginning to condense again as Van der Zander getting back close to Kobayashi. So, you know, it's that kind of ebb and flow is because the cars aren't the same despite all being Cadillacs.
Scott Fitzsimmons in Australia thanking me for reminding about cricket and the Gabba result against India. That's a great test match though, wasn't it? 5 days and it came down to the last 20 minutes. Great stuff. And by the way, my cricket story was only slightly incorrect, that I got the wrong spin bowler and the wrong item of merchandising. It was Ashley Giles and mugs, as Declan Brennan and Dom and a number of other people. But the point was there. I always remember that when Shea talks about Antonio Garcia being the King of Spain.
That's how I'll tell the story. It's Phil Tufnell's T-shirts.
No, no. You changed it again. Ashley Giles's mugs. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, well, it'll go Derek Underwood's jockstrap. You know, there we go.
Not sure they ever did personalised items of undergarments. We've got Ferraris in the pit lane. Shea Adam, bring us back to some form of sanity.
Alrighty, if you insist. We've got fuel and tires for the number 21 Ferrari. That's A, of course, and Daniel Serra bringing the car in from the lead of the GTD race. It's just some names to give you a bit of a whetted appetite during this pit stop. We've got in various cars, in the Porsche for Pfaff, Zach Robichon, first time driving since the start of the race. Andrea Caldarelli has taken back over the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini from Brian Sellers. Jack Hawksworth stays in the 14 Lexus. And I believe that was fuel only for Jack because he bolted up quite a few positions during that stop. And thank you, Pfaff, for taking Bantor out of the car because Earl Bamber is now on track in the 88 Team Hardpoint EBM Porsche. So we do not yet have Bantor on track at the same time, meaning that Larry and Earl both are staying on their wheels, at least for now. And it was a driver change for the 21 Ferrari, by the way. That is Simon Mann taking back over that car. In terms of GTLM, we've had full service for both of the Corvettes, Tom Milner and Antonio Garcia staying aboard, as we said. Both of the BMWs, John Edwards jumping back into the 24, Timo Glock, pew pew, staying aboard the 25. Davide Rigon reinstalls himself to the Ferrari fuel and tires for Risa Competizione as well.
Thank you, Shea. Hello to Jack Solowski. Good luck on the new job. Ski instructor starts Monday at IMSA Radio. Hashtag R24R. R24 Radio. As Kimberly Kobayashi continues to extend that lead, 1.5 seconds over Renger van der Zander, who's now got 11.5 seconds over Rossi. So Rossi stabilised that at 12.5 seconds to the lead. If he's got 17, call it 18 seconds on AJ Allmendinger taking a break from the NBC booth. And which one's his day job now, Shea?
Cat and dog sitting is his day job. He's got two pets that travel with him regularly.
That's right.
So, yeah. So, Mr. Tickles, the cat, and I believe it's Lola, the dog. Dog and cat parent is his primary job. Everything else is just a hobby.
Nick had a cat called Lola, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, she left me. Mm. She left me for wet food. It's a long story.
Never came back.
Came back once, left me again. Came back because she got handed to the vet with a chip and then came back home again. And then about 8 weeks later, left again for more wet food. Well, the joke's on her because Charlie gets wet food these days, so ha!
I sometimes wonder what goes on in the Damon household. I really do.
Too much. All sorts of animals doing all sorts of weird things. Mm,
absolutely right. So almost, in fact, after 20 past 11 now, but plenty of darkness running still to go, as we've mentioned. Sun went down officially at 1 minute past six, and we don't see it again until after seven in the morning. 7:13. More traffic to be dealt with by our leading cars. That's order of the day. Pick your passes was one of our Porsche keys to the race. And that's not just about passes for position, but getting through as well. Felipe Nasr now just a tenth or so behind AJ Allmendinger, and that's the battle for fourth. So now the 31 car starting to come alive a bit more. And on similar lap times as the cars around it. And in fact, goes through as they go through the tri-oval. Gets by the number 60 of AJ Allmendinger and goes back up into fourth position. Has 20.5 seconds to make up Alexander Rossi. That's his next target. However, pit stops will intervene, of course, in a relatively short order. About two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through their stints, the top drivers. In fact, Felipe Nasr is the one who's been out there the longest on this fuel run. Did 18 laps last time around. The car's been doing 21 or 22. Yeah.
That's what the virtual runs are getting as well, about 22 laps.
So that's spot on. Very good. Felipe Nasser on 17 on his 18th lap at the moment, so he's probably got another four laps at the front of the field. The Ally Cadillac has just completed 17 laps. Ray Gravandizander in Chip Ganassi's Cadillac has just done 14, so onto his 15th lap. Rossi completed his 16th lap and onto his 17th. It's all there or thereabouts within a lap or two. And remember, as far as the DPIs at the front of the field are concerned, Ollie Jarvis still a lap off the lead. And that 55 car not quite getting its lap back when it had the opportunity to at the last stop. And that will be haunting the team for the moment. They'll be hoping for another yellow flag at some stage in the future. The leading LMP2 car, the Wynn Autosport Orica, the distinctive purple LED lighting around the air intake on that Orica. It's the number 11 car in relatively clear air for once, Nick Dearman, as he's coming out of the infield section.
Yeah, the P2 race, which I would have put money on being a closely hard-fought fight with anyone from the 10, has not materialised at all.
Yet.
We've lost four of the cars already, or five of the cars, and the others are, like, Andrea Fuoco, the very, very good ex-Ferrari junior running in third, is, a minute 11 behind the lead. And I know it'll go down to nothing with the first, with the next yellow flag, but the fact that the Wynn Autosport cars managed to pull out 55 seconds on the Tower Motorsport machine, you think that's got a lot of basic pace the others don't have at the moment. And my advice then would be to just keep the powder dry now. You've got 54 seconds, you don't need any more. there's no point even getting the lap, because the lap will get given back as well. So you may as well just at this point just go into car conservation mode, knowing you've got that speed in the Orica.
On the Twitter, John says, shout out to all Ron fellow fans and Corvette fans in Canada. We're going to have Ron fellows in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre in the morning sometime. Just waiting to find out what time Ron will be available for us. And Drew Adamson, what are your thoughts on the GTD Pro Class? Talk about that with IMSA President John Doonan about an hour or so ago, Drew. I think for IMSA, it's the right thing to do. I don't think they really had a choice with only three full-time entrants in GT Le Mans. There's some new GT3 rules about to come around that the ACO and the FIA have been involved in that makes it far more a technical class, which has always been, for me, slightly. I love GT3 racing, don't get me wrong, but I've always been against GT3s doing anything at Le Mans, going to Le Mans, particularly as the top class of GT. And the reason I say that is because the lack of what I would call a technical rule book, it's a balance of performance and, currently GT3, a balance of performance and conformity formula. So you build the car, you have it balanced for its performance, and then what it's scrutineered on is nothing other than it is as per its passport. Each time that you bring it to the track, all the nuts and bolts have to be exactly the same. That leaves the option open to build very, very special cars for something as important to manufacturers as Le Mans. And when you've been around as long as I have, and that is a very long time, you will see in that, the folly in that is that the costs go up massively and you see special cars being built by manufacturers just to win at Le Mans, and they are taken out the realms of being customer cars at that point. And ultimately, it kills the class. It happened with GT1 most recently, and others as well. And that's why I've always been a little bit wary of having the current style of GT3 cars in terms of how they are defined and policed. if we get a more technical rule set with measurements defining the box and all that sort of thing, it might work. But to be honest, I don't think you need to change very much with GTE as it is at Le Mans. Where, Nick, you know, GTE AM at Le Mans is and has been for the last couple of years vying for the most numerous of entries along with LMP2. And it's the same in ELMS. It's healthy in ELMS as well.
I agree in the short term, but I can't see GTE and GTLM lasting in the long term.
Yeah.
With only one outlet for manufacturers to race in.
No, I agree.
So the question is, what do we do in 4 years' time when this generation of GTEs are all replaced by other cars? You know, the Porsche, the Ferrari will be replaced with something else. Because there's going to be no incentive for the manufacturer to build new ones. Do you, at that point, just say...
Unless people still want to buy them, Nick.
Oh, yeah. Our gentleman field is now P3. Do we always need to have GT cars at Le Mans? I know it's heretic to think about that, but if you had a P1, P2 and P3, is that enough? Or do you need a car that looks like a car that's on the road?
Well, but ultimately, that's what the new top class is meant to be, cars that look more like what's on the road. That kind of hasn't happened yet. Glickenhaus's car will be road legal, but, you know, it's not like... something that looks like a Porsche 911 is going to be at the short end of the field. When Porsche do their LMDH, there'll be styling cues. It's more likely to look like a Taycan, isn't it? Let's be honest. That would make perfect sense for them or one of their other hybrid offerings. A bit more like a Panamera around the front end. I like the old GT. Remember the GT1? When we talk about GT1s there, the GT1 Porsche came about because they were launching a brand new Porsche. And it was the first 911 with a water-cooled engine. That was the 996 model year with the fried egg headlights. And that was where the money came from the marketing budget, from that new car. So there's merit. I see there's merit in that at the front of the field. I just think you've got to be so careful with GT racing.
I don't disagree with what you're saying at all. I don't think GT3 should be, in its current form, should be at Le Mans because it's too subjective. It's not objective at all. It's completely subjective about what it is, you know. And it's not quite as bad as Hightower, for instance, doing 10 laps of Valencia anymore. But you know, it will get gamed. I mean, the manufacturers have managed to game GTE, which is far harder. You know, I bring to the court the first year of the Ford GT, for example. But you know, I think it'd be a difficult thing. But I think there's going to be a situation in 4 years' time where, you know, it's going to be difficult. The only company I can see actually making GTE cars is Porsche, because they can make them in a commercial manner easily.
Well, I think a technical based rule book and the ACO, I mean, this has all come about because the ACO set their technical working party, and Vincent Beaumanil, who's their sporting director, they set them a couple or 3 years ago now. I remember talking to Andrew Cotton about this from Race Car Engineering, editor of Race Car Engineering. They set them a project to effectively write a set of GT3 regulations for an quote-unquote ACO version of GT3. Now, it would seem stupid to do that and have that technical exercise if at some stage you weren't going to have GT3 cars in the big race. They already have them in some of their other championships. But they wanted to take ownership of some regulations to protect the sporting integrity of the world's greatest motor race at Le Mans. And I think having done that and then now knowing that we're going to see a new set of GT3 regulations, how much of that thinking that the ACO put into being 2-3 years ago, whenever it was, will be in the new rules? I hope... a fair amount of it, so that we can get to a situation where there's some technical, you know, and without waivers as well. Unfortunately, I've heard from inside the technical working group for LMP, for GT3, that waivers have been handed out all over the place already in the draft regulations. Dave Alcock says, do you think a technical rulebook for GT3 Pro replacing GT Le Mans could be as simple as a minimum and maximum box size, minimum weight, and then control with fuel usage, tank size, fill rate, etc.? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But I still think you need to have a set of regulations. I used to be able to look at a car and say, that's not legal. I remember crawling underneath the back of a Jaguar that went to Le Mans with Paul Gentilotti's team and finding a transaxle in the car and thinking, well, that's not legal. You're not allowed to move the gearbox. You weren't in those days. Didn't matter. It didn't last 24 minutes, never mind 24 hours.
Yeah, no, I kind of thought that was the answer.
But that car, strictly speaking, wasn't legal by the letter of the regulations. Sam Collins and I at Sebring many years ago crawled over a certain prototype, and we were looking underneath the ducts at the front, and we could clearly see what would be described in the rooms as wing-like structures, which were expressly forbidden in that part of the car, and asked the questions about it. The Ford GT, there was questions asked about the aero on that, but interestingly, the aero on GT Le Mans cars was more free than prototypes. Those flying buttresses at the back of the Ford GT, behind the back window, up from the rear wheel arches, they were wings. They were aerodynamically shaped. You wouldn't have been allowed to do that in a prototype, but you were in a GT. That's the sort of stuff I'm talking about when it describes a plane angle and how big the cord's got to be to make it a wing type device or not. That's a technical rule book. A GT3 doesn't have that. GT3 says, take your base car, build a GT out of it, we'll balance it, and then just bring it back to the track. I am oversimplifying that because it takes a lot of work to get your GT3 paperwork in line, and about 6,500 photographs, I've been told, by people who've done it. But I'm trying to simplify the explanation of it all. There's no reason, Nick, why we couldn't take a car that isn't the GT3 now, right now, and build a GT3 out of it.
Yeah.
You don't even need, strictly speaking, you don't even need the manufacturer to be on board with it. So it doesn't have to be a manufacturer build, and indeed we've seen that from GTs in the past, that they've maybe manufacturer been blessed them, but that's kind of changed now because it's customer racing, and the good news about it is that it's an income stream. Customer racing is still the next big thing. Porsche have been doing it for 70 years, so everybody wants to do it. That's why the TCR cars work so well that we talked about earlier on. That's why I believe that LMDH, DPI 2.0, will herald in a new golden age, another golden age for endurance racing, because LMDHs could well become the Porsche 956s, 962s. Of their generation, and that's exactly what we need in endurance racing, which to a greater or lesser extent down through the years has not been paid for by manufacturers. It's been paid by individuals or groups of individuals. So customer racing has to be there at all levels of endurance racing. I'll get off the soapbox now.
It's a good soapbox. I sat there agreeing with all of it. It doesn't make for a great conversation on a commentary, but it is true. And one thing that's interesting, and perhaps we can discuss this later in the show, is how they're going to differentiate with GTD Pro and GTD. Are they going to give the Pros 10 more horsepower, or is it just the talent of the drivers and they'll be the same apart from that?
That's a very good point, and I would think TBA on that. I think, again, it'll come down to the specification of the car as well, to what can be done and what we think that is. Let's have a quick look at the standings. We've got some pit stops going on. In fact, we've had both the leaders in. Shea Adam, tell us what's going on. Top three, in fact, in at the sharp end of the field.
We've got Ranger van de Zande in. This should be fuel and tires only for Ranger. Also into the pit lane, AJ Allmendinger, and he will be staying in the pit lane. I guess he's got to go back into the booth or to the motorhome with the cat and the dog. But that is Dane Cameron getting back in, I would imagine. He has not been in the car since the first quadruple stint that he did to start the race. We've got Tristan Vautier out in the number 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac. Oliver Jarvis was in the 55 Mazda as well. So very, very busy down here on the pit lane, but everything clean. And the fuel nozzle comes out on the MSR Acura, the last car that I was waiting on. So now we're clear again.